Fly high across the sky, from here to kingdom come. Fall back down to where you are from. Part 5 of the Kingdom Come series. Written by Grandfather Clock and Smoke and Jolly Ranchers. And read by God of Laundry Baskets. It is rated mature, with warnings for graphic depictions of violence and pairing Jester Lavore, Caleb Widogast. Bren shoots up, taking a ragged breath. The sunlight is blinding, and as he sits up in Liaman's tiny hut, he winces, listening to the birds chirp eerily from a distance. Last night, he decided to sleep by the side of the road, which, normally, he isn't foolish enough to do so. Last night was rough. He sighs, rubbing his face. He was riding the horse, which he stubbornly refuses to name. It's far too personalizing, and he's attached to too many things already. When the memory invaded his mind like a shock to the system, he froze, making the horse, black as the glittering dark all around them, stop in its tracks. "Mutta," he mouthed, remembering how she used to sing this lovely song for him as he tended to the fireplace. And Bren blinked, his eyes wide. Fuck. He didn't think about that in years. If it wasn't for Jester Lavore, he never would have, ever again. He buried his face in his hands, thinking of her freckled face and her bright eyes and determined gaze. "You couldn't let it go," he thought wildly. "You were so sure, and you were right." He wheezed, letting out a desperate little laugh, and the horse neighed nervously. "I kind of hate you for it." He got off and led the horse into a cluster of trees near the road, tying the horse to one of the tree trunks. He was barely lucid enough to create the hut, fishing absent-mindedly for the pearl in his pocket. Bren then collapsed to the ground, his eyes examining the stars critically. He looks to the horse now, who is sleeping. He bought him off some merchant on the road, offering a dazzling smile and casting suggestion when the merchant wasn't receptive to the deal. That was maybe a little fucked, considering. Just considering. He smiles bitterly to himself and looks to the small scars on his arms. But then again, he certainly tortured a lot of people for someone who was... someone who... The horse neighs, and Bren thanks him silently for interrupting the stuttering flow of his thoughts. Bren looks into his dull, unassuming bag and grabs out an apple. He then gets up, walks over to where the horse is standing, ignores the bubble popping as he leaves the boundary of the spell, and runs his hand down the horse's mane as he feeds it to him. The horse leans into his touch just slightly, and Bren feels himself almost unconsciously quirk up his lips. Oh, that is dangerous. He pulls his hand back and looks to where the road is stretching on, a frown playing on his lips. They're approaching Gallfield. He thought he was randomly wandering in any direction that wasn't Rexentrum or back to Nicodranas, but fuck, he's approaching Gallfield again. Why is he approaching Gallfield? Bren rubs his face, tired of his own bullshit. Why did he allow her to do this? Restore him like this? He can't do anything. He can barely take care of this fucking horse. Fuck you, he thinks furiously as he unties the horse from the tree. He doesn't know whose face he is imagining, but fuck you. Fuck you for doing this to me. He thinks if Master Ichthon schedules another tuning session, it might kill him. Bren mounts on the horse, appreciating how the soft hue of the sun makes the horse's coat shine. Even the muddy snow sloshing where the road dips looks brilliant in this crisp morning light. And he continues, with his heart sinking, in the direction of that little town and its outskirts. Bren Aldrick Emmendrud is not a good person. The closest he thinks he might ever come to even remotely being in the light is when he's with the Jester. He remembers once how they were outside her temple as she was smiling and handing out candy to the children who swarmed her. One came with tears in their eyes, showing her a scrape on their knee. Bren raised an eyebrow. It was just a cut. Nothing to cry over, he thought, thinking about how Master Ichthon would send a pulse of necrotic energy through his system when he allowed these pathetic little hisses to escape his mouth during the surgeries. Can't you see this is nothing to cry over? Jester gently reached for them, and Bren watched with his shoulders tensed as she clasped her hand on her holy symbol, casting cure wounds. The cut immediately closed, and Jester pulled out a cloth from her dress pocket to wipe the red from the child's knees.
There, she said, beaming. Look how tough you are.
The child giggled, and Jester stood up. Noticing him staring, she asked coyly, What are you thinking, Bren? He was thinking that he felt the absurd desire to ask her to teach him that spell. But thankfully, he kept his mouth shut, simply giving her a considering gaze. Him, a cleric. The thought was almost funny in his mind, except he remembered his first real solo assignment out there in the periphery of some insignificant Empire town. He'd been instructed to break up a meeting of Archheart followers. Fucking heretics, he can hear Master Ichthon hiss with disdain in his voice, even in this fucking memory. And there had been a woman.
Bren?
Jester asked, her voice still light, but a furrow to her brow. Ja, he said, almost absent-mindedly. There had been a woman. And she'd been pointing to him desperately, trying to send some kind of healing spell his way as he butchered his way through her clergy. He'd set her on fire, and she'd screamed so horribly. Bren had thought that they'd had just been driven mad by their heretical deity, unable to distinguish ally from enemy. But Jester Lavore was smiling at him, her eyes crinkling like they did when she was ignoring just how much of a sinner he was. And he thought it might have been something close to a second chance. Then Jester pulled him by his holster into a kiss, and he forgot all about it. Like he's already noted, Bren isn't a good person. He doesn't know what he's doing here. Bren sold the black horse in Allfield to buy another one, who had a brown coat and dark eyes and a stronger frame. It was a good deal. Bren can't afford to become empathetic with these animals. He thinks of Jester casting greater restoration on him, her eyes brimming with fear and desperation and anger, and he shakes his head to himself. Master Ichthon mentioned this to him. Your sentimentality gets in the way of your own interests, my boy. He was circling Bren, who was holding his hand against the wound on his shoulder left from the hounds after he hesitated in slamming that rock against them with animate objects. Master Ichthon. He supposes it's a little wrong to still call him by the title of Master
given what he now knows of the man, and what he did to Bren, and what truly happened to Una and Leofric Emmendrude. Even thinking his parents' names makes him want to wince and somehow hide. Perhaps it was a test. Maybe good students who were able to resist the Modify Memory spell got to keep their parents. But Bren thinks of that title, Volstrekka. The weight of it on him makes him want to let out a strangled scream, and he thinks that there was no pathway where Ikgethon would have allowed such a blatant loose end. The new horse neighs beside him, and Bren wrinkles his nose before tying him to the fence that follows the river. He's in the surrounding forest, and it's strange. It's strange how he feels like a creature under his skin has ripped itself out of him and now travels with a facsimile of his smile and his stance and his magic, while this forest and these pine trees look the exact same from 13 years ago. The green seems to tower around him, and with every step he hears a crunch as his feet move through the muddy snow. Passing through the fence where it's broken off, the wood chipping and rotting, he makes his way to the river. Bren watches the dirty water ripple and hurtle in front of him. Why am I doing this? He thinks miserably. They're fucking dead. He looks back to the horse, who gives him an uncaring cuff back, and Bren smiles, his face brittle. If only everything could be easily replaced. He gazes at his covered arms momentarily, before sighing and turning back, pulling out from his brown bag a small leather loop as he did so. He casts levitate, and the horse gives him a startled look as Bren feels himself beginning to float. He directs himself over the sloshing, muddy water and continues to float on the dirt pathway he knows leads to that wretched little shed. Better not to leave footprints if he can help it. His mind is barely running. He's just barely reacting to his momentary impulses. This is surely a bad idea. But he has a horrible feeling that everything's ruined. And it makes him ridiculously want to think about the start. Bren finally sees the rotting wood of that shed and freezes momentarily, before hesitantly coming forward and examining the outside. It's unassuming, the same as before, but Bren can see where some of the wood panels are jutted out, cracked from brute force. He remembers. How could he possibly forget? It was the animate object spell Matt Ikgethon was so insistent he perfect. Extend your range, my boy. God damn it. This is so fucking stupid. Bren pushes open the shed door and it collapses down in front of him. He sighs, flinching at how the sudden sound breaks the tense silence of the cold, still morning. He then casts dancing lights, making them follow his form as he floats inside. It's empty, of course. Bren cleared it and incinerated the furniture all those years ago, after he buried the ruined corpses. There's dried blood splattering along the walls, which Bren eyes with cool distaste. The shed is so small. Smaller than he remembers, but he was younger then. Younger and less powerful and trembling despite the cocksure smile on his face as objects went flying, hurtling into the heretics as one of the women, who looked older and smarter and something like a leader, widened her eyes at him before reaching for her holy symbol and casting. Most of them went down so easily. Bren floats in the middle of the shed, the dancing lights all around him, and thinks about how they crumbled as he leaned in from the entrance, from where the wood panels are imperfectly lined and the cracks in the wood. The cold sunlight filters through, making the red of the dried blood even more visible, and he winces. Bren's own reaction kind of shocks him. Since when does blood make him wince? That woman was tougher, throwing spells at him desperately and hissing as he neutralized them. She tried to cast silence on him, but when the destructive pattern of his counterspell dematerialized her magic that final time, she looked to him with fear and pain in her eyes and reached out her hands and... he incinerated her. Her hands, blackened as she tried to touch him, were outstretched, and for a moment there, she seemed almost holy. He repressed that thought in his head then because it was traitorous to feel sorry for the heretic leader, to feel anything beyond grateful his glorious nation gave him the opportunity to serve his king. Bren closed his eyes helplessly and takes a shaky breath, trying to maintain his concentration on levitate. Jester reached out, her hands were soft on his cheeks, and she wanted so desperately for him to trust her. Fuck! His eyes open in shock as he collapses to the ground, the impact of his knees making him take a sharp intake of breath at the momentary flash of pain. He lived under that cloud Ikathon put on his mind for so long that he forgot what it's like to feel even remotely free. And now it's like he's drowning in the silence, in the air, in the beautiful Nicodranian sun. He's drowning. And as he sits up on his knees, he looks up and sees the symbol, faded but still visible, chalked onto the far wall. Two opposite facing crescent moons imposed on a diamond. Heretical insignia, he thinks. Bren wonders what a crown's guard might think of him now, kneeling in front of a chalked arch-heart symbol. It's a compromising symbol, and he should get up. He should leave and disappear. Disappear to where no one could find him. He shouldn't dwell on these things, not bother to wonder why that woman expended such high-level magic to heal him. She couldn't have known. She couldn't have cared. He couldn't have mattered. He wonders if it was Jester's lovely scrunched face and how similar her hands moved to that woman's when she cast Greater Restoration, her mouth moving in the exact same way that keeps pushing him back to Allfield. His eyes sting, and he's running his hands on the dirt floor, and he feels sick to his core. Jester Lavore sees good in him because she sees good in everybody, but he can't get this out of his head, can't get her out of his head, and he might be a little ruined. He's always accepted this about himself, but being here is different. Every breath feels like too much, and he thinks he can't live much longer the way he is. He's going to die like this, because everything that he is, everything that he's done, it's far too much. He's nothing if he isn't that. Bren's spine suddenly straightens and he looks at the chalked symbol in horror. He feels warmth, but it isn't natural. It's arcane, almost blistering, and it feels... it's his mother's embrace. He trembles, feeling arms that aren't there tighten their hold on him, and fuck, his eyes are wet. This is the first time he's felt his mother hold him in more than a decade, and his voice catches as he tries to speak. He closes his mouth and counts internally to 10 before he tries again. Is this supposed to humble me? Bren hisses. There's no response in the still air. Bren shakes his head to himself. No, he mouths to himself. Just talking to this heretical deity is a prison sentence, if not death. He's not going to tear up here. Absolutely fucking not. Bren Aldrich Emmendrude hasn't cried since he was 17. When he collapsed into his bed, Ikathon provided for him after coming back from Blunthal. He put a pillow over his face and his entire body shook as he let out shaky little breaths and allowed tears to smear against his face. Embarrassing, he thought then. That was an honor. This can't be. He can't be undone here. Not in this place for traitors. Not for these bastards who were his first solitary kills, since even before Astrid and Wolf stood beside him as he killed his parents, offering their silent support, hands on his shoulder. This can't be where he breaks. Not for this. It can't be for this. But his eyes are starting to burn, and it's becoming harder and harder to ignore. I didn't... He begins, and then bites his lip, not even knowing what the fuck he could possibly say. The words die in his throat again, and it's a little hard to breathe, and Bren squares his shoulders. This woman tried to heal him, and Jester did heal him. He doesn't know what it says about him that he resents them for making it even more impossible to come back to Rexentrum. He dreads Ichthon's reaction to his belated arrival. He was expected weeks ago. The chalked symbol seems to radiate coolness towards him, and he clenches his jaw. You tried to save me, he manages to snap. His voice is accusatory and so, so weak. He looks around frantically for something to distract his gaze, but there's nothing in this shed, no objects, and certainly no people. He buried those fuckers out back. His eyes widen. His hands quivering, Bren gets up, momentarily bracing himself on the floor. He doesn't quite realize what he's doing, being only able to think about how he needs to get rid of the horrifying, gaping emptiness in his chest. He sighs and shrugs off his coat, leaving it in the shed as he exits. He'll get it when he's done with what he thinks he might need to do. Bren circles out back and examines the area. Though the landscape has shifted slightly, there being hills and dips where there didn't used to be, it's still essentially the same as it had been before that night. It was dark then, but Bren could pick up certain markers, like that crooked tree or the cracked rock, and he slowly begins to recall where he buried the corpses. He looks down at his hands and sighs, his movements groggy, almost dreamlike. He pulls out a flower from a catmint plant and, after hesitating just a moment, crushes it in his hand. He mutters arcane words under his breath, summoning cat's ire. He isn't supposed to know that spell, technically. Master Ichthon didn't teach it to him, so he isn't supposed to know. He isn't supposed to be able to summon an earthen cat paw, but then again, he isn't supposed to have a cat, and he isn't supposed to be here. He's supposed to be in Rexentrum, and he isn't supposed to be watching the giant earthen cat's paw drag out the corpses of heretics. And then the paw dematerializes, and he casts it again, not bothering to worry about all the reserved magic he's using. When he's tracked down 15 bodies, there were 15 worshippers that night, which he remembers because beyond his sharp and obsessive mind, how the fuck could he ever forget? His eyes momentarily rest on the most burned corpse. It's a woman wearing what must have been a lovely blue dress at one point, and it's her, the cleric. He looks away and smooths out his shaking breath before summoning the paw again and digging out neat, ordered graves for them next to the exterior of the shed. Bren searches for long branches, fumbling as he carries them, clenching his jaw as dirt smears against his clothes.
He narrowly misses tripping from an exposed root and sighs before continuing on his path. He has no inkling that this is the right or respectful thing to do for the dead, besides something internal, something warm in the back of his mind, something unmeasurable that scares him in how comforting it feels to indulge it. He uses Maximilian's earthen grasp when he can no longer summon cat's ire and covers the bodies in heavy layers of dirt before using the long, straight branches to mark the graves. He's dirty. Bren's hands are covered in grime and his clothes need to be washed and... He's shaking. Still. He stands before their graves and he shakes. He wonders if maybe he should say something, but as he hesitantly opens his mouth, he can just picture who the fuck does he think he is? He scoffs to himself and pictures Master Ichthon's disappointed face. Bren runs, stumbling as he goes around the shed and down the dirt path. He doesn't examine the pine trees swaying in the wind or the muddy snow as he does. He doesn't bother to cast levitate, pushing himself past through the current of the disgusting water. He feels cold and wet, and that's fine. He thinks about how much he's shivering, and then he isn't supposed to be thinking about how he just committed capital treason. And oh, he feels himself tripping suddenly onto the ground. He rests there, and his chest feels so tight, like he can't breathe. There are tears in his eyes, and he's shaking his head. No, 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 not like this. It can't be like this. He feels the warmth of the sun against the back of his head, and a ragged breath forces its way through his lips. Not like this. The horse makes a gruff sound, straining against where he's tied and reminding Bren where he is. He slowly gets up, lumbering to the animal. He crosses through the gap in the fence and absently fishes through his bag, finding an apple and offering it. He neighs, not looking pleased, but accepts it regardless. The other one, that Bren sold to a merchant in Allfield proper, was the horse that loves apples. Bren roughly wipes his eyes with the back of his hand and sits down on the ground, pulling out his book. Soon, Leoman's tiny hut materializes around him and the horse neighs again from outside, and Bren smiles helplessly. You can't fit, he wants to explain, but why the fuck should he explain? This is an animal. He ignores the horse's noises and closes his eyes. It's the brisk morning, but he needs to rest if he's to make it to Rexentrum by tonight. He tries to ignore the fear gripping him and forces his shoulders to relax, feeling himself surrender to an unsatisfying slumber. Last thing he thinks about, this is Jester Lavore's lovely face. Bren rubs his face, groaning slightly. Teleportation circle always takes such a toll on him. He examines the teleportation room curiously for any changes from the last time he was here, but it remains frighteningly similar. The red curtains are drawn where the windows are, and the lanterns emit a soft, almost orange glow. There's no furniture here. The circular room in the turret of Master Ichthon's manor has a large, intricate sigil constructed along the floor that he was given access to and memorized when he was 20 years old. He recalls suddenly Master Ichthon's cold hand on his shoulder as Bren's sharp eyes studied the design, and he resists now the urge to tense at the intrusive memory.
The horse neighs beside him and he sighs. Ren doesn't really know why he didn't leave the animal behind, but perhaps. Maybe he does. Maybe he foolishly hopes even a fraction of Master Ichthon's annoyance might be directed at the horse, and the difference would be distinguished between losing most of himself and losing everything. The door to the teleportation room opens and Bren stiffens, but it's just Master Ichthon's assistant who stumbles out. She straightens herself and gives him a narrow look. "Bren Eldrick Emmendrude," she hisses. Her eyes dart between him and the horse, and she runs a hand through her straight brown hair anxiously. He gives her a long, languid smile he doesn't mean, and she turns pink very prettily. "Fra Pol." He walks over to her, directing the horse to follow him by pulling on his reins. Pol follows his movements with her wary eyes, and her eyes widen as he pulls her close by her hand and puts the reins in it. "Take care of this for me," he says. It's incredible how calm and smooth his voice sounds. Emma Pol clenches her jaw, looking at the horse with disbelief. "He's very upset," she says. Bren forces himself to continue holding up that lazy smile, hiding how he momentarily stills when she says, "he." "You're in hot shit, Herr Emmendrude." Pol eyes him with naked curiosity, something like hunger in her eyes. "Where were you?" He tilts his head like he's honestly considering telling her. After a pause, he says, his tone soft and apologetic, "Not for you to know." Wolf might have laughed at the facsimile of empathy playing out his voice. Bren looks to the door that she came out of and bites the inside of his cheek. "Is he free?" "In his office," Pol says, still looking at the horse. "Does this animal have a name?" He smirks. "Emma." Pol momentarily freezes, and then, seeing his mean little smile, glares at him. "Fuck you," she adds after a second, looking for the proper revenge to his shitty teasing. "Hopefully he doesn't eat you alive." It fucking works. It wouldn't have worked a month ago, but now it fucking works. His fake smile momentarily cracks, and Pol steps back, startled by his dark look. He already has, he wants to say. "Can't you tell that he already has?" He gives Pol a courteous nod and moves past her. Pol isn't like them. She isn't a mage, and Bren has no idea where Master Ichthon found her. He can feel her gaze on his back, and he sighs. She's useful and clever in her own ways, Bren supposes. He can practically hear Master Ichthon in the back of his head saying that having pawns who can't offer much beside their own loyalty and whose continued survival relies solely on staying in my good graces have their own uses, my boy. Then again, he exhales nervously as he passes by Master Ichthon's portrait in the Great Hall after he comes down the long, winding staircase. He thinks perhaps he shouldn't feel so smug about being a slightly more useful tool. It isn't as if his own survival doesn't depend on whether he's in Master Ichthon's good graces. And right now, he is decidedly not. Bren stops in front of Master Ichthon's door and takes a shaky breath before forcing himself to relax his shoulders. Hesitating for just another moment, he forces his hand up and knocks once. There's a frightening silence, and then he hears a soft, "Come in." He has to know it's Bren. Pol must have notified Master Ichthon when she found Bren in the teleportation room. He has sending, after all. Bren heard Master Ichthon's voice in his head so many times, and only ignored it once last week. Master Ichthon didn't bother to send another, and Astrid didn't either. The oppressive silence was more punishing than if he berated Bren every hour. He clenches his hands before releasing them and reaches for the doorknob, bowing his head as he comes in. Unable to look at Master Ichthon's face just yet, he closes the door behind him and stands in front of the desk where his teacher is sitting. Master Ichthon's even breath is deceptive, just like Bren's. Aaron hot shit, Herr Emmendrude. You may sit. He gestures to the seat in front of his desk beside Bren. Bren nods weakly and sits. He rests his hands on the arms of the chair and forces them to remain still. Look at me. His voice is still pleasant, and Bren's arms. Bren forces his head off, trying to hide his momentary shock. His arms are aching. Why are they aching? He hasn't had a tuning session in a month, but he's suddenly all too aware of the horrible sensation of the things under his skin that sometime in the dim light make his scars glow, and they feel so wrong. Master Ichthon's face is impassive, but it crushes Bren all the same. You didn't respond to my message, he says. His dark eyes glitter, watching Bren's every minute movement. The light filtering through the window into the office made his skin seem to glow in yellows and oranges, like he's on fire. You were trained better than that. Yes, sir, Bren mutters, hands mildly digging into the arms of the chair. Master Ichthon's eyes narrow, and then... It's strange. Bren swears he sees his mouth moving slightly, but then he blinks and... Nothing. Master Ichthon's face remains unreadable, but there's something playing under it. Something seething, and Bren is reminded intimately of how similar the two of them can be. Both are creatures, wearing the faces of people. Looking at this person, this archmage, it hurts. You brought a horse to my manor. He resists the urge to look away. I was injured on my last assignment, he says, by way of explanation. Weak, but not technically a lie. Internal bleeding and cracked ribs are a pretty significant injury, even where Bren is concerned. They wouldn't heal him here. They would consider it making him too soft, and would prefer the additional weeks he couldn't work. And so, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't quite matter where Bren chooses to recuperate. It's a lack of communication that's his true sin. The way Master Ichthon raises his eyebrow, both pleased and displeased at his short statement, makes him realize, with a chill down his spine, that he would have been able to tell if Bren lied straight to his face. You allowed yourself to be injured, he says, and he sighs. His face is stony. Bren resists the urge to wince. I'm sorry, he says, his voice quiet. Weak, he thinks dispassionately. Why are you so weak? I didn't train you to be weak, my boy. His words mirror Bren's thoughts eerily, and Bren stiffens. His tone is so cloying and claiming it makes Bren kind of sick. Master Ichthon's gaze drops to Bren's arms, still in pain, and he raises an eyebrow. It's been a while since your last tuning session. 33 days, Bren whispers. Fuck, They're painful in the best of times, but right now it feels like the crystals in his arms are pulsing. Tomorrow at noon, Master Ichthon says, interrupting his thoughts, and then he smiles. It's cold, hard, and so, so knowing. Don't be late. It isn't until Bryn is already outside, after nodding jerkily at the cool dismissal, that he realizes Master Ichthon didn't bother to question him further on why he didn't respond to the message sent by sending, which means he already knows, or at the very least, he thinks he does. Bryn realizes he's gripping the doorknob tightly, and he exhales, letting it go. He counts to 10 because he thinks that if he doesn't, he won't be able to recite the arcane phrases Master Ichthon taught him with that perpetual disappointed frown on his face. He then casts teleport and disappears to somewhere far, far away. But not that far. Astrid isn't pleased to see him. She stares where he materializes himself in her safe house in the outskirts of Rexentrum, her eyes wide before her characteristic scowl works its way onto her lips. "You fucking asshole!" she hisses. Astrid throws the pages she was reading at him, and they harmlessly scatter to the floor. Bryn looks down at them, unimpressed. Nice way to treat state secrets. He examines the interior of the secluded little wooden cabin that Astrid bought a little over a year ago. It's as bare as it used to be, except for the couch Astrid is currently sprawled on, a table, some cabinets, and a stove on the far wall. Astrid scoffs, sitting up. She runs a hand through her hair absent-mindedly as she considers him. "They're hardly secret," she mutters. "Master Ichthon thinks I would be better served studying up on some military history. Empire conquests of the Julius Dominion." She looks resentfully at the pages. "I've been rereading this shit since my friend," Astrid glares at him, "went missing in action and I was forbidden from contacting him." Bryn sighs, his stomach shifting uncomfortably at the thought of Master Ichthon withholding him from Astrid. He probably might have responded to her, and his master knew that, and walks over to the other side of the couch, sitting beside her. "It's nothing. Needed some time. I found out my parents were innocent and almost lost my faith and my mind. I came to my senses." Astrid tilts her head to him. Her green eyes are searching, and Bryn looks away. She always sees so fucking much. "He was really angry." She looks ghostly in the flickering lantern light. Ghostly and uncertain. "I thought he might..." She cuts herself off there and narrows her eyes at him. "Where were you?" Bryn looks to the scattered papers on the floor and grimaces. "He was understanding," he manages to say, his voice quiet. Master Ichthon knows he intentionally kept away, but he also knows Bryn came back. Bryn would always come back. "Don't be late." He remembers Master Ichthon's eyes drilling into him dangerously before idly examining his staff resting against his desk, and his stomach drops. Bryn smirks bitterly, because if he doesn't, he thinks he might break. He would never be late again. Seeing Astrid's tired face only solidifies that sentiment. He looks back to her. "Took care of some loose strings." His voice is careful, because this isn't technically a lie either. Giving proper burials to his first real solo murders counts as taking care of loose strings in the most treasonous way possible. But he doesn't quite know why he did it. It felt right at the time. As a gesture, it is somewhat empty, considering how he's still doing what he did back then, but it felt just. And that's what scares the fuck out of Bren. He wonders, examining the dirt still under his fingernails, why he decided suddenly he thought he knew what was right in that shed, even momentarily, even for a second. He's fucking told what is right. That's Master Ichthon's job. Who is approved, who isn't, who is allowed to die, who has to die, who doesn't, and God, Bren can't remember the last time his sense of righteousness didn't line up with the Empire's. He can practically feel Astrid's curiosity and annoyance turn to worry in the room as he loses himself to his thoughts, but he just can't bring himself to care. He feels alone in a different kind of way than he's used to. He doesn't really want to talk to Astrid, even though he sought her out. He wants the Nicodranian sun and the sand between his toes, a little blue tiefling smiling at him, the little blue tiefling who broke his entire world and made it even more intolerable to be the person who he was for so many years, and now he can't even turn to her. Bren, Astrid says, and she sounds a little unsettled. You'd tell me if there was something really wrong, right? He gives her a hollow smile. Yeah. Astrid nods and turns to go pick up the pages on the floor, and Bren watches with a distant gaze. Her hair seems to glow in the light like a halo, and in that second she looks almost heavenly. Her movements are graceful, and her jaw is sharp and elegant, and he feels an utter loss for her. Master Ichthon's abrupt instruction must have terrified her, even as she acts so unaffected. Like he said, Bren Aldrich Emmendrude isn't a good person. Bren Aldrich Emmendrude is being punished. He stiffens under Master Ichthon's cold gaze. Right now, he says in disbelief, in spite of his attempt at impassiveness. He hates how his voice momentarily stutters before he catches himself. It's dark. 11:48 post-meridium. Bren thinks miserably. And the only source of light is Master Ichthon's lamp and the lanterns set up along the walls. Something flits across Master Ichthon's face at his response, and he widens his eyes. Sir, Bren adds hastily. He sighs, massaging his temple. All these assignments have turned you half feral, he mutters, as though Bren isn't even there. He clenches his jaw as he considers Bren's still form, Bren's head tilted slightly in submission. You're no good on your own. I'll keep you stationed closer soon enough. Bren can feel his shoulders start to tense at this, and he forces himself not to react. Fuck, he thinks, annoyed. Master Ichthon continues to consider him, and then he smiles, his face bitter. Cricks have taken one of the ostentatiously hidden safe houses along the periphery of Blade Garden, 2 miles west. This isn't officially sanctioned. Flush them out and find the leak. The safe house can be rebuilt if it needs to be. Take care of this. He pauses,
noticing how Bren is too still to his biting words. It's a tell, and Bren needs to learn how to shake himself off of it. And then his entire face seems to shift. Master Ichthon says, softly, "Redeem yourself, my boy." Bren nods, the movement slightly jerky. It might have been a trick of the trembling lamplight, but Master Ichthon's eyes seem unusually bright. His gaze seems to be appraising, his face almost warm, and Bren feels sickening shame for falling so short. "How many, sir?" Master Ichthon looks down at the report he's holding, seeming disinterested by his halting response, and his lips curl up as though he's amused. "9, he says, and Bren freezes. "At least 3 mages." "At least 3 mages," he thinks, a little stunned. There's a difference between worshippers whose false gods rarely offer them any boons and trained Zorhassian mercenaries. This isn't even what he typically does, and certainly not alone. He's being punished. His hands involuntarily clench into fists, and Master Ichthon's eyes drop down to them, his face becoming hard again. Like a flick of a switch, Bren remembers Jester's dark, angry eyes, her hand on the wound on his chest. His chest aches now like his fucking arms at the mere memory. "They're going to kill you." He closes his eyes and then opens them, relaxing his hands and unclenching his jaw. "When am I to be expected, sir?" Master Ichthon watches him, and Bren resists the urge to move to flinch in this heavy quiet. He lets out a short, aborted laugh, and it's silent, the only thing interrupting the stillness being the sound of air passing through his lungs. 15 days at noon, he says, his eyes momentarily distant, like he's just come up with that arbitrary deadline. He gives Bren another long look before turning back to the documents on his desk. "You're dismissed." His voice is clipped. Bren nods again and leaves the room, pausing in his movement to close the door behind him carefully. He feels Master Ichthon's gaze on his back all the while, and it's kind of quietly horrifying, like a shot through his chest. "They would have let you die!" Bren closes his hands back into fists at his intrusive thoughts and makes his way across the great hall. He ignores Master Ichthon's portrait that always seems to follow him with his brutal, painted gaze, and begins walking up the stairs to the turret, his footfalls the only thing interrupting the moody silence. Recounting the number of steps in the stone staircase is only so distracting. He's done this so many times, it's barely helpful anymore. 100, 101, 102. The thought hits him again like a fist to his face. "They're going to kill you, and I want you to leave them!" Bren snarls as Jester's voice rips through his head. He slams his fist into the stone wall and feels something like relief as pain momentarily flashes through his hand. He freezes for a second, shocked by his own simmering rage, and then slumps his shoulders, looking down at his hand miserably. Nothing is broken, but his knuckles are bleeding, staining the bandages he's wearing along his arms and up to his hands from the operation. His arms feel like they're on fucking fire. Bren doesn't cry during those sessions, not ever, but the last time was. He takes a ragged breath. Even admitting it to himself feels fucking impossible. Last time was close. The surgery made the previous aching worse, and merely looking at his arms makes Bren sick to his stomach. "They're going to kill you, and I want you to leave them." Ren shakes his head to himself and buries his face in his hands. Oh, Jester, he mouths silently, smiling helplessly despite himself. Jester, who cares too much, who cares so much she ruined his delicate balance. Jester, who wants to make him into a what? Traitor? Martyr? The thought makes Bren want to bark out a rough laugh. He continues walking up the pathway, trying to expel her from his thoughts and his dreams, and he finally reaches the room adjacent to the teleportation room. He makes his way to the far side, where there's an empty desk. Bren sighs and knocks on the wood. The sound reverberates through the silence. There's a pause, and then he hears frantic steps from another room as Emma Pole makes her way to her desk from the doorway adjacent to her desk. She looks tired, her brown hair a slight mess. Her annoyed look deepens when she realizes it's him. "Herr Emmendrude," she says, rubbing her face. She always sounds a bit sarcastic when she gives him any modicum of respect, and he wonders coolly if she really finds herself that intrinsic to Master Ichthon that she makes enemies and rivals so easily. Pole sits in her chair under his considering gaze and pulls out a familiar black binder. "If you're going to ask me to file your taxes, I'm not going to do that. I'm not your secretary." Bren gives her a long look, and her gaze flits away. She somehow looks even more put out, and the fake smile playing on his lips widens. "Did someone ask you to do that?" he asks, not really caring. He's delaying the inevitable. He's delaying his entire body bloodied and bruised because he's being punished. "Edelwolf still doesn't seem to understand my job here," Pole says. His distracted gaze sharpens when she mentions a wolf, and Pole's eyes brighten at his sudden interest. She tilts her head, a look playing on her face like she's trying to appear conspiratorial. "Maybe he doesn't understand his." Bren smirks. Oh, this is new. Edelwolf, who carries daggers on him like most people carry coin, being unable to do his job. Bren wants to lean close and ask Pole if she really means that. If the man who dragged Bren 2 miles to a safe house as Bren slowly bled out in the harsh Empire winter is truly that incompetent. He wants to scare her a little with the details and ask why someone who presents herself as such a good Zemian woman is working with such creatures. He wants to ask if she really thinks this will win Bren over. He says nothing, and simply reaches out to tap the binder she's holding. "Checking out," he says stiffly. Pole nods, looking a little disappointed. She opens the binder and makes a note of his departure, before snapping the binder shut and pointing dismissively with her thumb to the room to their right. "That's been clean. You can use it to cast." "Danke," he mutters and passes her by through the doorway. She's still looking at him, and he wants to snap at her, snap at everyone, to fucking look away and leave me. He shakes his head to himself. Fuck, he thinks desperately. You really have become feral. His arms are aching. His back is stiff from being strapped down for hours on end, and they still haven't managed to silence his thoughts through the torture. He thinks, and he can't lose his mind here with Pole watching. So his hands simply tremble, filled with nervous energy he doesn't quite know what to do with. Bren continues into the small alcove. It's big enough that he can take out his gem-encrusted chalks and carve out a temporary teleportation circle. So he fishes for material components in his bag. He swallows his unease at the tight space and gets to work, snapping his fingers and summoning dancing lights. It normally takes just a minute, but Bren's movements are groggy, uneven, shaking. least 3 mages. It isn't the thought of facing them that's unsettling. He had challenging assignments before. It was the look on Master Ichthon's face in that room. His cool, glittering dismissal. Astrid is sitting just a couple miles away from this manor, bored out of her mind as she studies up on ancient military tactics. He could have sent them both easily if he wanted to. They're stronger and smarter and more clever when they're together, which means Master Ichthon wants him weak. He has faith in you, Bren thinks coldly as he finishes drawing the sigil. Don't squander this second chance. But his furious mind can't stop worrying. Spies don't take on strongholds alone. Volstruckers typically work in small units when taking on this kind of mission. This is unusual. They're going to kill you, and I want you to leave them. Fuck. Arcane words seem to rip out of Bren Aldric Emmendrude's mouth as he tries to drown out the sweet sound of Jester Lavore's lovely voice with his mouth. Shut up, he thinks desperately as he feels himself dematerialize. Shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up. And then there's finally silence. Blade Garden isn't meant for people like Bren. The Obsidian Stronghold is bureaucracy and soldiers and maps of the border to Zorhas and uniforms and the mountain pass and a certain unit of Cobalt Soul monks who scowl at him as he passes them and the crisp cold air and the dark clouds, and it's all a little horrifying and it's all a little much. Every soldier he passes wears the same basic plate mail with the silver and dark crimson design with certain differences based on rank, but he'll look like his father. Leofric Emmendrude, proud Dwendalian, who Bren murdered in cold blood when he was 17 as the snow fell around him. He tries to avoid looking at them, but the hallway is so crowded and Bren's relatively unused to the frantic pace of everyone stationed here trying to get to where they needed to go, as compared to the rest of the soldiers who spend most of their year assigned to this stronghold. He finally makes it up several staircases from the teleportation room to where he remembers is the office to the assistant of the Archmage of Domestic Protections. There are representatives for the Cerberus Assembly in all the major forts along the Empire's borders, but the influence is more intense near Zorhas for self-evident reasons. Bren hesitates for just a moment before knocking on the wooden door. Come in, someone says after a pause. It's a clipped, slightly irritated Zemian accent, the posh one, from the streets of Rexentrum. Bren straightens his back before opening the door and closing it behind him. He turns to look at the man who invited him in. He's a handsome half-elf, sitting behind a desk like Pole's, though his is much more organized. There are maps covering the walls, all marked up and covered in shorthand military symbols and complex code. Lamps affixed to the wall emit a sharp arcane white light, different from what's in Master Ichthon's manor. But that isn't what startles Bren. What startles Bren is the older man sitting in the chair in front of the desk of the assistant, who is in a slightly tilted position in his chair to peer at Bren coming in. He's an older elven man in deep blue robes. He has startling white hair and such pale skin, and Bren feels himself stiffen, realizing exactly who this man is. Martinet Ludinus Deleth raises an eyebrow. Oh yes, you're supposed to be coming. He also has that Rexentrum accent, and hearing the way his voice drips with dismissiveness makes Bren feel like a teenager again, having all those beautiful and wealthy classmates whisper and flirt with him, giggling to each other as his face burned with embarrassment, always the butt of some joke he couldn't possibly understand.
Dileth turns away from breath and looks to the half-elf. Get him one of the rooms on the mid-level, he says dryly. Alone, Bront.
Of course, sir.
Bront puts down the binder he is holding and opens up one of his folders on his desk, looking through the internal documents. Though I must inform you, there is very limited... Please, Dileth interrupts, and though Bren can't see his face, he knows an amused smile is playing on his lips. This is the head of the entire Cerberus assembly. Bren can feel the power radiating off of him, even in his relaxed, seated stance. Fuck, he thinks wildly. His hands tremble slightly, and he tries to force them still. I don't want even my most worthless soldier catching this one's crazy. Bren can't help but widen his eyes momentarily at the cutting comment, and being unable to take the sting of Bront's considering look on him, he bows his head and examines the black obsidian floor, imitating impassiveness. His breathing is uneven, and he feels so fucking exposed. Exposed and weak.
That is a Volstrucka, Bront asks. His voice is curious, like Bren's some zoo animal.
Careful, Dileth's voice drops slightly, and Bren clenches his hands into fists beside him. We take care of the cricks. They take care of what happens inside the border. The mocking smile returns into his voice near the end. I'm very fond of you, but I'm not fond of you enough to protect you if this one, he gestures to Bren, decides your question is a threat to national security. Bront's face flattens slightly at the reprimand. He runs a hand through his blonde hair and narrows his eyes at Bren. Room 112, he mutters, before looking back to his superior. I apologize for my forwardness, Master Dileth. Bren can't help but imperceptibly wince at Master. He is completely out of his element here. He isn't a soldier. He should have been. It was his next natural step after graduating the Solstice Academy. But Master Ichthon was so convincing. Simply being in this place for captains and generals, is uncomfortable, and he quietly turns to leave. As soon as he moves from his position, he hears Dileth coolly say, still looking away from him, I haven't dismissed you. Bren freezes. This feels like a test, like his first kiss at the academy with the other girl, Hannah, with the curly brown hair, wrinkling her nose and asking if he ever made out with anyone from the backwater he crawled out from. Bront smiles smugly from behind his desk as Dileth gets up from his chair and walks towards Bren. His face is flat with none of the warmth he shows his assistant, and Bren widens his eyes as he comes uncomfortably close. I apologize, sir, Bren manages to say, forcing himself not to step back. Dileth reaches out and grabs him by his chin and tilts his face, examining his features. Bren lets out a shaky, startled breath, trying not to wince at his cold, unexpected touch.
So, this is one of Trent's little pets, he murmurs. He hoards you all, you know, keeps you close, like his nicest porcelain.
He lets out a small laugh at his joke, and Bren tries not to tremble. He doesn't respond, simply allowing himself to be held by him. Fuck, how can he respond? All his fucking walls and this man's smug smile tears them down, turning him into the scared little kid that first left Blumenthal. He can probably kill Bren with one word. Mercifully, Dileth lets go of Bren's chin and Bren stumbles back,
his shame and confusion probably written all over his face. Dileth's mean smile curls wider, and he says, quietly, "You're dismissed." Bryn nods, his movement sharp and awkward and stilted, and it takes all his willpower to walk out of the room in a somewhat measured, steady gait. They both watch him silently with their curious eyes and sheltered faces, and Bryn hates how his hands are shaking as he closes the door behind him. He takes deep, calming breath as he makes his way down one staircase and then down to the room he's assigned. He pushes his way through the hallway, feeling the sudden desire to torch anybody who even comes slightly close to him. It can't be helped that shoulders brush, that people stumble into him, but Bryn thinks he might lose his mind until he finally reaches the less busy residential area. He manages to find room 112. There's no key. Some kind of abjuration magic opens the door for him and closes it shut as he enters. He thinks that any other time he would love to explore the mechanism behind the thing, look more closely at the symbols engraved around the doorknob, maybe memorize the sigil drawn onto the floor around the door inside of the room for later study. Bryn scoffs, collapsing on the small bed and burying his face in his hands. Another thing he's letting them steal from him. It was pure in the beginning, Bryn thinks. It wasn't always this wretched. It was a year and a half, where things were going to be all right. Sure, the teachers wrinkled their noses at his dirty boots, and the other students didn't really like or understand him, and the slight drawl of his accent. But he had Astrid, and he had Wolf, and he had himself. It was going to be all right. Bryn's slowly beginning to realize Master Ichthon has ripped all three of those things right from under his grasp. He barely gets to see Astrid since they're both so busy. When he's recuperating, she's gone. And when she's free, he's in deep cover. He's sure it's by design. Bryn barely sees Wolf. It's months at a time. That fucker's mouth is entirely too clever for his own good, and every time the thought of finding him and seeing the state he's in is terrifying. Today, he doesn't even have himself. Probably hasn't had himself in a while. Dileth held him in his hand, and Bryn surrendered to it, because it was easy, because it was second nature. Because all he could think at that moment was, fuck, and please, and just end it. It's surreal. And he couldn't believe it while it was happening to him as it was happening. But it did. And it's been happening for a while. At least Master Ichthon bothered to be subtle. It's late. He should get some sleep. It isn't like Bryn is going to be able to get anything done tonight. 1:43, anti-meridium. His distracted mind offers, and he rubs his arms. Soft flashes of pain accompany every touch, and he wants to scream in frustration, as if he doesn't have enough on his plate, and now here's his arms and this mission where he has to apparently flush out Kryn operatives alone, while an archmage and his countless, undoubtedly talented sycophants sit around with their maps and codes and secrets playing at war, while in all likelihood, Bryn could become nothing but a stain of red and gore against the dirty snow. Jester was right, his mind traitorously whispers, and Bryn scoffs, hands still in his face. His breath is stuttering, and it all hurts. The thought that has been plaguing his head all night tears through him again. They're going to kill you, and I want you to leave them. He hisses, grabbing the pillow and pushing it into his face. The momentary reprieve the darkness offers isn't nearly enough, and after a small hesitation, he snaps his fingers and materializes Frumpkin, for the first time in more than a month, onto this plane. The pressure on his chest is welcome and grounding and worth the stream of annoyance and rage and worry radiating off the familiar. "Sorry," Bren mutters, pushing away the pillow. Frumpkin stares at him, his tail flickering dangerously, and he smiles helplessly. "I'm sorry, Frumpkin." After a tense, stiff silence, Frumpkin lays his head against Bren's chest, and Bren lets out a shaking breath, raising his hand to run his hand through the fur. A horse. Bren wants to wince, remembering the look of confusion and panic on the animal when he sold him to the merchant in Allfield. The horse used to nuzzle his palm like this. He's blinking. Blinking to hide something. And it's horrifying. When did I become so weak? His jaw clenches. Weak for archmages and weak for animals. Bren imagines Jester running her hand through his hair and beaming down at him. Weak for heretics. Bren Aldric Emmendrood goes to sleep with a shitty thin blanket to that uncomfortable thought playing in his head. He takes down three soldiers and one of the mages before he's really in trouble. The safe house isn't even that significant. It outwardly appears to be an unassuming cabin in the forestry lower down the mountain pass to where the grand outpost of Blade Garden is situated, and the military doesn't use it. It falls under the direct jurisdiction of the Archmage of Civil Influence, and is intended solely to be used by the secret Dwendalian Order, entrusted to find and execute traitors on Empire soil. It was meant for the Volstreckers, and Bren stayed there once himself, but he barely remembers. He wasn't lucid then, he was dying, and it was only Astrid deciding to cauterize his wounds that saved his life, even as he hated her as she did it. The two guards are easy enough, Bren hidden behind a large pine tree and relatively far from where they patrol in a circular pattern around the cabin, watches them through Frumpkin's eyes. He isn't allowed to use his familiar, technically, but he also deeply suspects no one is playing fair in all of this, and he's scared. He isn't supposed to be. He's a spy, and it isn't even the possibility of dying that terrifies him. That would be a reprieve, and a desperate part of him still thinks it would be an honor. But the idea of dying alone, dying as a shadow, dying as someone who is so insignificant and powerless that people talk around him even as he's in the room. Pole. Master Ichthon, that shitty half-elf, the head of the entire Cerberus assembly. He doesn't want to be alone anymore like he used to, and that's horrifying. The guards wear chitinous, insect-like leather armor typical of the military operatives of the Kryn dynasty, but it fits them oddly, and they carry themselves with a nervous demeanor. One keeps adjusting his helmet, using the backwards-facing horns, and the other hisses at him in a language Bren doesn't recognize. It's fairly clear that whoever these people are, they aren't necessarily affiliated with the official army on the other side of the border. It's a shame that hardly matters. Flush them out. Ichthon wants them dead, first and foremost. Even corpses can be questioned later. Bren briefly toys with the idea of kidnapping one of the guards and then replacing them on their shift, but the two guards stay close, and Bren grits his teeth. Scheiße. He snaps out of Frumpkin's vision. They'd know if he'd opened his mouth anyway. He's
terrible with accents. Beggars can't be choosers, he thinks idly. This isn't a complex structure with multiple entries and exits. It's a cabin. They're far from home. And so they'll assume, justly, that any stranger is an enemy. The only thing he has going for him is the element of surprise, which he has to exploit as much as he possibly can. Bren hesitates for just a second before taking out of his bag an eyelash encased in gum arabic. He casts invisibility and slowly makes his way closer, sticking to the near thick trunk of the trees around him. When he sees the two guards make their way suitably close to the cabin, Bren takes out bat guano with one hand and phosphorus with the other and gives himself a moment to think about Jester's lovely face twisted in anguish and pain as he shouted at her the last time they talked, and directs a fireball so much stronger than he usually allows it to be to the cabin and over channels. The crystals under his skin glow through the bandage, and he screams with pain, looking down at his arms as his invisibility is dispelled by his use of combative magic. It's intense, too intense, he realizes as he feels blood stain his arm wraps, and his entire body is trembling and aching, and he looks back up, preparing for their response. The cabin is... Bren Aldrich Emmendrude is 17, and Astrid's hand is on his shoulder. The snow is falling, seeming orange and yellow and red in the firelight, and it is beautiful. It's all so beautiful, and it seems like something out of a dream. Wolf stands beside him, a bitter smile playing on his lips, as he stares at the fire engulfing Bren's childhood home. He turns to Bren, smirking just a little. Wolf tends to become an ass when he's scared. Real pretty, ain't it? Bren's shaking, but he manages a hesitant smile. Sha. He opens his mouth to try to say more, but he really, truly can't. And then Wolf's holding him as he collapses into his sure grip. Astrid watches them silently, playing with the necklace around her neck. Hey, Wolf whispers. His voice seems to tremble. I'm sorry. I thought they were good ones. Bren shrugs, his movements stilted and awkward. His head feels blank from all the stress and adrenaline, and he's slowly beginning to crash. He doesn't want to. He wants to remain angry. He doesn't want to be heartbroken. I'm sorry about yours. Wolf smiles with all his teeth, and it's a little unsettling. Don't be. Bren, Astrid says, quietly forcing his wide-eyed gaze away from the murderous way Wolf's eyes are glittering. He stiffens at the sound of her. Fuck, it's not her, it's the... voice. He doesn't. She does. And it's all wrong. It's deeper and it's older and it's a little mean and it's a little sad. Bren Aldrich Emmendrude. Bren didn't see his parents' bodies blacken in the flames. They were too far inside the house for that. By the time the flames cooled, the three of them were on their way back to Rexxentrum. He wonders if his parents looked the way these guards look, with their forms darkened and shifting in the moving entropy of the fire, like a blurred image in real time. They collapse instantaneously, and Bren looks past them to the crumbling remains of the cabin, and he sees five other injured fighters still standing with two others crumpled against the rubble. One of them, who is simply gore staining the ruined floorboards, isn't wearing the leather armor, and Bren thinks distantly, now two mages. If he survives this next onslaught, he thinks he might have some ideas for them. Bren runs in the vague direction of Blade Garden,
stumbling through the muddy snow. He knows they'll chase him. Hopefully he's out of range for most of their spells. Hopefully they'll think he's the bait, choosing not to pursue him for fear there are others waiting, better hidden. Those are a lot of assumptions, and he winces at the weakness of his plans. He's already thinking about teleport. He has 15 days, and taking out nearly half of their group, despite suspecting they were the weaker of the crew, is pretty good for 3 days in. They have nowhere to go, so they'll stick to this area, but without the element of surprise, they'll counterspell whatever he does. All this is, of course, optimistic. One of them has a nasty greatsword, and if they reach him, he's already dead. Bren feels a sudden pull and knows immediately something is about to go terribly wrong. The sensation is strange, unlike anything he's ever experienced before. He's being pulled back, as are the pebbles and twigs and dirt around him, and as he feels his feet momentarily lift as the pressure increases, he falls to the ground and grabs for an exposed root. This isn't, he's heard of reverse gravity before, but this, he swears as the root rips out from under the ground. He digs his finger into the dirt, clawing through and trying to find purchase in the loose soil. He can't counterspell if his hands aren't free, and if he frees his hands, he's hurtling towards them. He hears footfalls and turns as best he can to see the one with the great sword approaching. Oh, fuck. Bren wants to laugh. Shield also requires for his hands to be free. The Kryn warrior swings for him, and Bren braces himself for the hit. The translucent mage armor, impossibly, manages to avert the momentum of their first attack. Then there are arcane sparks where the blade jabs along the protective barrier and the soldier snarls at Bren's bemused expression. He goes for his back and Bren fucking laughs as he lets go of the dirt and slams into the soldier, pushing them both back in the direction of the ruined safe house. This is ridiculous. He's going to die. His manic smile slightly recedes as he's finally able to look at what's been pulling him back. It's space. He can see stars glittering in the darkness created around the cabin as two mages glare at his tearing form. Bren raises his hand to counterspell, because of course he does, and watches as the other two warriors rush for him with their battle axes ready. One of the mages makes a motion with their hand, looking at him with utter disgust, and the pattern of his counterspell is broken as it arcs towards that floating mass of emptiness and nebula. Bren feels the swing of a battle axe against his shoulder and he snarls. He can do nothing to deflect their weapons against his body as they butcher into him. When the mages says something that sounds vaguely arcane, and Bren feels the direction of the pulsing pressure begin to redirect and his knees break as he pelts to the ground. The other warrior he's entangled with manages to use Bren to break his own fall, and then Bren feels that lovely greatsword finally stab into his skin. He loses track of what's happening next. Bren is vaguely aware they're carving into his stomach and his legs and his shoulders and his arms, which by themselves hurt and pulse more than anything they could do to him. He digs his hands into the sloshing, disgusting dirt and lets out a choked laugh. There's a hiss and he stiffens, lifting his head up weakly to see Frumpkin dematerialize as one of them kicks his lovely cat. And it's all so incredibly stupid that this is what causes tears to well up in his eyes. You're supposed to tell Jester, he thinks, his body trembling. Who's going to tell Jester? He laughs again, and it's this horrible, pathetic sound. He's broken his promise. He's broken his promise, and now he's going to die. And he's not even going to have his cat as he goes. Bren Uldric Emmendrood. It's that voice again, that deep, isolating, androgynous voice whose every word is charged with power. They sound vaguely annoyed and sad. They seem sad. Tell her yourself. He
He wants to wrinkle his nose and demand to know exactly what they want from him as he's being stabbed to death, but then he hears screaming. It's horrifying and loud and all around him, and this energy. He knows this energy. It isn't arcane. He's felt it in Jester's lovely white marble temple and in that shed outside Allfield. This energy, this magic, it's divine and it's holy and it's everywhere. The screaming continues until the voices die away one by one. He hears in stilted common one of the Zorhasians snarl, "Who are you?" And then a thud of the final body dropping to the floor. "The coast is clear, Emmendrude." Their voice is slightly more gentle this time, and Bren finds their attempt at comfort even more chilling. He lifts up his head, his neck twinging in pain as he does so, and he sees corpses fallen all around him. His arms are shaking. He forces himself up and looks to where the expanding mass of dark energy was, but it's no longer there. The mages have also dropped to the ground, and the warriors' armors look singed, but it's different than his. The putrid smell of burnt flesh doesn't accompany this incineration, and he's thankful for it. There's warmth on Bren's face, and he looks up. The clouds have parted. The sun looks down at him, cold and glittering and remote, and he wants to curl into himself at the sight of it. "I'm going to die," he manages, and his voice is cracked and broken. "Of all the people—" He cuts himself off, killing the sound in his throat because he's grateful. Of course he is, but he can't help but think of another night a long time ago when two innocent people needed some divine intervention. If you heretic deities reserve only one or two people you can save every couple of years, I have some bad news for you. He smiles bitterly. He picked the goddamn torturer. He thinks of that woman 13 years ago and he feels sick. You picked wrong twice. The deity, that being in the shed, the Archheart, doesn't respond, and Bren pulls his knees close to his chest, wrapping his arms around them. Every part of him hurts, and he knows he's leaking red. The thought of making his way back to Blade Garden for Bronn's bright eyes to look at and catalog his various wounds for later gossip horrifies him to his core. He's shaking, and Frumpkin's gone, and Jester. He hasn't seen Jester in a month. They told him to go to the coast. Perhaps this is a favor from the Traveler, but looking at the brutalized, twisted bodies around him, this feels new. He's terrified because this feels different. This is entirely all too much, and Bren needs to leave. He needs to be out of the eye of this sun and these trees and these corpses, and he knows what he needs, but he has to tell Master Ichthon. He has to beg for a longer leash. He needs to be redeemed so that things can go back to the way they were from before he disappointed his teacher and earned this punishment. He closes his eyes and allows the familiar arcane words to travel through his tongue and casts teleport. Luckily, Pol isn't at her desk. She's somewhere else in another room, but Bren hardly gives a fuck about this woman. He doesn't want to deal with her insincere simpering and antagonism today. She's not at her desk, and so she's not doing her job right, and Bren walks right past her station as quietly as he can manage, casting invisibility on himself as he does so. He feels strange, like a ghost, walking down the stairs and across the great hall. He pauses by Master Ichthon's portrait momentarily and meets those dark, intelligent eyes and remembers the mean, biting look of Daleth as he grabbed onto Bren and dug his cold fingers into his chin. "He hoards you all like his nicest porcelain." The thought makes Bren want to laugh. He wonders if this is what wealthy, powerful archmages do all day. Break their nicest porcelain. Humiliatingly, he feels tears start to well up in his eyes, and God, does he hate this. He hates how off-kilter he is, and how he can't stay still anymore, and how his own reflection makes him want to scream, and how much he was wrong, and how much Jester was right. They're going to kill you, and I want you to leave them. He turns, not wanting to deal with that stinging, condemning remark, and begins to walk down a different hallway. He hasn't gone here since he graduated, but there is something here, something pulling him in this direction, even as the familiar halls feel wrong, even more so than they usually did. This was supposed to be his place, and these are supposed to be his people, and they were going to leave him to die. Jester was right. He exhales, his breath shaky, and finally stops in front of Master Ichthon's collection room. Bren considers the wooden door. He isn't allowed here without permission, and every time he comes down to this room, it is with Master Ichthon watching him like a hawk. It is his prized room of heretical insignia. Bren was terribly bored by this place when he was younger, not caring much for the bureaucracy and the worship quite yet. Master Ichthon didn't have enough time then to drill it into him. It was all about the magic, and this room felt uncomfortable and dead then. Bren clenches and unclenches his jaw nervously and pushes open the door. There are two main displays, each hosting dozens of symbols, but Bren remembers this place as well as he does anything else, which is to say, perfectly. Looking at all these pendants makes him want to wince. He murdered and tortured so many, and this, it's a reminder. It's why he avoids this area. Bren averts his gaze, makes his way to the left, wondering why he's even here in this manner that belongs to a man who seems content to let him die before giving him even a modicum of imagined freedom. But then, almost immediately, he finds what he doesn't completely realize he's looking for, and it's beautiful. The frame of the diamond on the back is made of ornate, shining silver, and the two opposite-facing crescent moons imposed on it are encrusted with beautiful, intricate red rubies. He doesn't know what to make of it. It's so fake, and it's so real. It's dishonest in how it's nothing like the scrawl on the side of the shed, making the heretics seem so much stronger than they actually are. It makes it seem like there's a danger. It makes it seem like they can fight back in any organized capacity. It was 15 desperate people 13 years ago, with only one of them having any magic, and she used it to try to heal Bren. He wonders how those heretics treat their nicest porcelain, and smiles bitterly in spite of himself. This symbol is, it's worthless, but he can feel a dignity in it too, a wistfulness and a longing and ambition. It's familiar. It's heart-wrenching. Bren reaches for it, but as he does so, he hears light footfalls and his stomach falls. Fuck, he thinks, fumbling for his gem-encrusted chalks. He has to go, he has to leave before Master Ichthon can fulfill his promise of keeping Bren close. But he doesn't. There's nowhere. The coast, Emmendrude. I can't, he hisses, even as he's drawing messily on the furnished hardwood floor. He feels shame drip in every word he says. She doesn't. I was horrible, and I was wrong. She was right, and I can't. She didn't want to be. Fuck you, he hisses, his hands trembling. The footfalls are getting louder, and Bren wonders if it's the blood-soaked footprints or the smell of the red that was his downfall. Do you want to be like this forever? His head is dizzy and everything is spinning and the circle is ready, but he's still hesitating and it's killing him. This is all fucking killing him. He's not going to survive this. Answer me. He feels his weak will succumb to itself. And as he slams his fist to the ground, he feels the pattern of Master Ichthon's counterspell try to break apart his temporary sigil, and Bren looks up to his angry eyes and gives him a soft shrug. "What?" Master Ichthon begins, his voice thunderous, but Bren lifts his own hand and feels the flickering dark energy of his own counterspell tear apart Master Ichthon's. He hears something like a mean little laugh in his head, thinks of Jester Lavor and how right she was, and then, Bren Aldrich Emmendrude is gone. The end of Fly High Across the Sky From Here to Kingdom Come, Fall Back Down to Where You're From. Part 5 and final part of the Kingdom Come series. The next part will begin in the Objectivist on Fire series. Thank you for listening.